Hey friends, Devin again for the Bardic Babble podcast, show where we talk to creators about the things that they create. On today's episode, we have John Ciccolini from Beetle and Grimm's. John is the head production goblin, his works over at Beetle and Grimm's, and we really dive into the process and the production line for Beetle and Grimm's. I do want to preface this episode, though. We had some slight connectivity issues, which caused a little bit of hiccup during the show. We're always learning and expanding our knowledge base when it comes to podcasting. This one, unfortunately, just got away from us, and just due to a bunch of different things not aligning, we weren't able to get any re-recordings. So I apologize if that's a non-starter for you, but it's a great interview. We really learn a lot. And then one more quick announcement before we dive into the episode. I just wanted to let you all know that the Bard Podcast Network just launched our first Kickstarter. One of the other arms of the Bard Podcast Network is the One Door Dungeons press brand. This allows us to create tabletop add-ons and supplements for a variety of systems. We mainly focus on 5th edition. But our first Kickstarter is a deck of micro dungeons, locations, and adventures to really help you in the planning and preparation phases of a campaign. There will be a link to the Kickstarter in the show notes, or you can head on over to any of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Bard_podcast. The pinned post on all three of those should be a link out to the Kickstarter. We're taking initial signups now so that when the project goes live, everybody can be notified at once. Again, that's Bard_podcast on all of the social medias. And now, without any further ado or hullabaloo, let's kick it on over to John Ciccolini of Beetle and Grimm's. All right, welcome back, listeners. Today I have John Ciccolini of Beetle and Grimm's. He is the head production goblin over there at Beetle's. How are you doing today, John?
Huzzah, everyone.
Huzzah, indeed.
Glad to be on.
Glad to have you. All right, so Beetle and Grimm's has very quickly established itself as a very common name in the D&D space. So what exactly do you do for the company?
Before we get started, one thing I want to say, I love the title Bardic Babble.
Oh, thanks.
I've got to say, bards are, for whatever reason, they're like a personal favorite of mine. I love playing bards. I love DMing bards. They're great. In our very first box, Waterdeep, one of our pre-generated player characters was a bard. And it was just so fun creating that character. And then later, when I DM'd Waterdeep, I got to DM a bard, that same bard. And it was just so fulfilling. It was just, I had to say that about bards. Love Bardic Babble.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
For Beetle and Grimm's, I'm one of the five founders. Anyone, you know, who doesn't know sort of the genesis of the beginnings of the company, Matthew Lillard is a big proponent of D&D, always has loved D&D. We've been playing for decades. And we, the group of us, were invited to the Stream of Annihilation some years ago. At that event, we just had this idea that to pitch to them about a collector's edition, you know, high end box set for the tabletop role player. And you know, to Wizards' credit, they're just so collaborative, and they just bought in. I mean, we had to do, you know, we had to do demos, and we had to create like a beta box and show them that, you know, we knew what we were talking about and what we could deliver. But again, they were just so collaborative. And my job in head production goblin, I help with the production of the boxes. I work a lot with our illustrators, with our in-world handout artists. I work a lot with our production facility, and obviously all five of us are always on to brainstorm the initial concepts. What's going to be in the box? That's always the biggest question. What's in the box? We're all part of that group.
That's awesome. So how did you meet the rest of the team? Like, are you guys just old college buddies? Did you work in Hollywood together?
Well, strangely enough, we were all students at an acting school in New York. It's called Circle in the Square. So we were all students there. And our very first D&D game together was in the lobby of the Circle in the Square Theater at night. Yeah, we were there. We were in that building for, you know, we're able to have access to the building for rehearsals and such. And we just, you know, we sat around on the lobby floor and just started gaming. And we've been gaming ever since.
That's awesome. Do you guys have like a weekly, bi-weekly game that you still get together for?
Yeah, we had a bi-weekly game for many, many years. It's, you know, since we've started Beetle and Grimms, unfortunately, it's been harder than ever for us to actually get together and play, because not only are we just so busy right now, but we're also playing in other people's games now, right? As part of, you know, reaching out to the community and involving ourselves in the community. So we're spread out a little bit more. So it's a little bit harder for us to get together. But yeah, we still play. In fact, we recently finished running as part of Curse of Strahd. Matthew was DMing that, and that was a ton of fun.
So how has it been shifting from that, you played the game for fun and to hang out with your friends, to shifting that to work? It's your job.
Yeah. I mean, I think anybody who works in this kind of industry is going to be hesitant to call it a job, right? Because it is fun. And yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the downsides, is that when Wizards comes out with their big new release, oh, we would love to play it, right? We would love to just have the surprise of diving into that campaign and playing it and not knowing what's going to happen. So yeah, I mean, we sort of have to go back a little in the archives to find adventures that we don't all know if we want to play in it. But, you know, small price to pay to be able to dig into the new adventure and just really, you know, read it and think, you know, just dive in on, okay, what is in this platinum or gold or silver box? What are those items that a DM is going to really need to have a crazy immersive session and wow their players?
All right, listeners, we're going to have a little shift in the audio there. Our audio recording program had a little bit of a hiccup. Still here with John, but he's going to sound just a little crisper.
Testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2.
Much better. So when you guys are starting to look towards the next box, does Wizards reach out long time ahead, a short, like what's the time period you guys are normally given notice?
We're given notice pretty early, but we wish that we had more time with the final locked content, right? I mean, it's a ton of work. And so it is a bit of a scramble for us from time that they say, okay, content is locked, for us to be able to get everything that we need to get created and approved and in production and, you know, out to our customers. There's definitely a scramble there. And so that's why if you're a customer, you may ask, well, if Wizards is releasing the book in September, why can't you release your box? It's just not possible. We just don't have that much time. But Icewind Dale is now, you know, we've done several boxes now, and we're getting better every time, and we're able to shorten that time just a little bit every time. So we're getting closer and closer to Wizards release date. I our first box was months after.
Nice. Can you just run us through the cradle to grave? You get that call or that email, hey, we're releasing a new product in Q3 of next year. Here's what we got. Where do you guys go from there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are certain parts of box elements that have to be started earlier than others. Some that rely on vendor partner. Like if we're working with WizKid, for example, on a box element, or some other vendor that has a bit of more of a lead time than us, we have to work with Wizards to figure out, okay, what are the details around that element that we need earlier in order to get those in the pipeline, in order to get those moving. Paper products, as you know, anyone who's sort of done this kind of work can tell you, it doesn't take as long as something that is, you know, maybe a piece of jewelry, or maybe it's a mini, or maybe it's the outer box itself. So we definitely have to, you know, it's in waves, right? It's not all at once. So we sort of have to figure out, okay, what are the elements that have to get started earlier? Let's get as much information as we can needed to start on those elements. And then, you know, we can prioritize from there. So, you know, we definitely get started on even written material before content is locked. Wizards is nice enough to, you know, to ahead of time say, okay, here's a draft. You can start brainstorming using the draft, but just know this stuff may not be locked. So we just sort of have to keep in close connection with them as part of our collaboration and review to make sure that we're not putting anything in the box that maybe got cut at the last minute.
Gotcha. And then, I mean, you spoke a little bit on written, but what do you generally have to give the most lead time?
Yeah, like I said, lead time is, you know, if we have minis, those are definitely a big lead time. The outer box is always a challenge. The, you know, the DM screen is something, it's a thicker piece. It's more of a complicated piece. So we get started on the DM screen. DM screen is an element that we always have in our boxes. That's one of those things that we just feel like is a must. So that's one of the earlier elements as well.
Nice. And then when you guys are working through like the models for the minis or the art design for the screen, does Wizards pass on, you know, this is what we want on it? Or do you guys just kind of conceptually brainstorm and plot it out and then ping pong it back to Wizards?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter. That's what's so great about working with Wizards. They, you know, they're really collaborative, and they allow us to be artistic and make choices and put together our vision. You know, obviously they're going to be really careful about their IP. They're going to make sure that we're not doing anything that contradicts, which we wouldn't want to anyway, right? You know, we want to handle that IP with as much care as they do. But yeah, we brainstorm. We say, okay, after having read this adventure, what would a DM really need on the interior, so that we can reduce those moments of, hold on, let me flip through the book and find that. Right. If we can just prevent, you know, three or four of those over the course of an adventure, we will have done our job.
So how does the licensing work with Wizards? Are you guys just, you purchase the licenses, they hand you the licenses? Are you guys partially owned? Like how does that whole ecosystem work for you guys with Wizards?
Well, let me see. I should probably be careful here. I'm not exactly sure how much I can say here, but yeah, we are a licensee. So we are a licensee just like other vendors that are other companies that are licensees of theirs. You know, generally that means that the items that we make are, you know, they're D&D products, right? We're licensees, but they're ultimately Wizards of the Coast is going to own the items that are in the box, and they're going to have final say, which has worked out just fine.
So have you guys ever run into an issue where you thought you got through a final and then somebody from Wizards came back and said, oh, we have a revision here, and this is the final that we're going with? And did it impact your guys' production leads or anything like that?
Very rarely. That very rarely happens. That's what's, you know, with Wizards, they are really good about proofreading their stuff, editing their stuff, making sure all of their stuff is really accurate and on point. So that's, you know, it doesn't happen. Now, we've had some issues, interestingly enough, you know, with our Eberron box, for example. When we shipped our first round of boxes, there was one large map that was left out, and we actually had to resend to all of our customers who had gotten that initial round of boxes the map in a separate mailing, you know, because we just, you know, we obviously had to make good on that. So there are definitely been some bumps in the road for us as a brand new company, but not really due to Wizards.
I gotcha. Is it just the five of you that works the top to bottom of this whole thing?
For a long time, it was. But now we have who we call the Valiant Three helping us in some aspects of the business. We have Jason, who does a lot of our social media. We have Justice and Michaela, who help out in so many ways that I could spend a half an hour just telling you all the ways that they help us. But yeah, we've got a few extra people now helping us with different things like our streaming events. You know, Michaela is so talented at everything she does, from streaming. She does some design work for us. She looks at some of our reporting and some of our survey work. And then Justice is a very talented writer and editor. So he helps us with writing bonus encounters and editing our stuff. He knows the rules of 5e inside and out. So he's always a great person to bounce things off of. So we've grown a little bit, but we're still small.
When it comes to your guys' marketing, you have to get very creative. It's a very digitally adjacent field, tabletop RPG. How has it been working extensively in social media, extensively on Twitch and in live streaming?
Yeah, well, you know, we're the five founders, we're old, we're ancient. And so the whole streaming game is something that we had to learn, and we're still learning, and we haven't really even learned it. So we have leaned heavily on Michaela and Justice for the whole streaming aspect. Jason has really helped us with our social media, like our Facebook and our Twitter. You know, Matthew has been doing those things for a long time. So he's in that space. He's in that world. But for the rest of us, it's definitely been a learning curve, definitely been a learning experience. But, you know, this whole role-playing and D&D subculture is just so welcoming and supportive that it's been a great experience.
Very cool. So can you take just a couple of minutes and just really break down the different tiers that you mentioned, and then, you know, just kind of the staples that you guys like to include? We've talked about the DM screen and some paper products, but like, what else do you guys like, you try your hardest to include in every box?
Yeah, sure. So the very first box we did was the Platinum box, which was a little crazy. It's a huge undertaking to start with a Platinum box. But at that time, we sort of knew that eventually we wanted to have different tiers. We just did not have the infrastructure or the bandwidth in order to be able to offer that from the go. But Platinum is sort of our premier collector's edition tier. And then we introduced with our first silver box, which was the Sinister Secret of Sinister Silver Edition, or Ghosts of Saltmarsh. And then we introduced our first gold edition for the Eberron box. And now when we did Avernus and with Icewind Dale, we're starting to be able to offer both a platinum and a silver edition with those releases. And some of the core items that you're going to find in every or almost every Beetle and Grimm's box is, like you said, the DM, you know, it's a DM screen that you'll only find in a Beetle and Grimm box. It has unique information on the interior that we have sort of put together. Some of it is pulled right from the module. Some of it is compilations that we put together ourselves that we thought would be very helpful. And then a lot of the time on the exterior, we will commission a unique piece of art, something that really excites us, something that you won't find anywhere but in one of our boxes. So you've got the DM screen. Encounter cards are another staple of all of our boxes. So these are cards that are designed to fit on your DM screen. They're supposed to sit on the DM screen, and they have the art for the monster or the NPC on the front for the players to look at during the encounter. And on the back, it has all the stats, has the stat block for easy reference for the DMs. You don't have to flip through the book, the monster manual, while you're having that encounter. We always take the book and we break it out. So if you know, the book is amazing, but it's a lot of pages. Sometimes it helps a DM to break that out into subsections. So, for example, you know, for Waterdeep, our first box, there was a section called Volo's Guide to Waterdeep. And it's something that could be handed to the players. And the value of having those sections broken out from the book is you can hand the section that's good for the players to the players. You can have your appendix on, you know, one side of your, you know, of your table, and you can have the chapter that you're currently in on another. And then you can take all the other chapters that you're not currently referencing, sort of put them aside. Just makes it a little bit easier for the DM to split things up. And battle maps, something you're always going to find in one of our boxes. We love, love, love doing battle maps. Sometimes we take the map that's in the book and we blow it up. But most of the time, we take the map that's in the book and commission an artist to do their rendition of it. For example, our legendary edition of Castle of Ravenloft, of Curse of Strahd right now, has an entire set of battle maps for the entire Castle Ravenloft. So battle maps is something that our customers always seem to want more of. So we've been trying to increase the number of those. In-world handouts. You know, from the very beginning, we wanted these boxes to really improve the immersion into the world, into the campaign. And we love the idea of being, instead of the DM just reading a note out of the book that they've been given, to actually hand them the note. Let them read it themselves. Let them feel the texture of it. You know, let them hold on to it. Let them keep it to be able to reference later. And so we work with a group of really talented artists that help us put those together using the content that's in the book. Most of the time, it's using the content that's in the book. Sometimes it's just a mention in the book of a piece without the actual content that's on it. And we have to sort of work with Wizards to figure out what that content is going to look like. We've also been pretty consistent with including what we call sort of jewelry piece, you know, those metal pieces that you can hand out, whether it's a badge of the watch, Waterdeep, or if it's a chain infernal contract from the Descent into Avernus box set. These are those really shiny pieces that get a lot of oohs and ahs when you introduce them to the game. Those are also another big staple in our boxes.
Very cool. I love the medals, and I'm very glad that you guys sell them independently on your store, because I definitely picked up the Shark God medallion a couple weeks ago.
Oh, very cool. Very good. Yeah. Shark God medallion, one of my faves. It has the little leather strap on it. Yeah, that was from Saltmarsh. You know, and they're not all of the jewelry pieces are able to be sold individually. So, for example, the infernal contract that I mentioned, you could only get that in the box. But we try to figure out which pieces we can sell individually, like the coins, the gold dragons from Waterdeep that we've been selling for a while now and are really popular.
Very cool. Do you have a personal favorite box or item?
Yeah, I like to say that our most recent box is always my favorite, because I just feel like we're getting better as we go along at doing these boxes. With each box, we learn lessons, and hopefully we're getting better and better as go. Now, that being said, there's always going to be a place, special place in your heart for your first, and Waterdeep has that place in my heart. I'll always love the work that we did on Waterdeep, our first box, and it was just such a special time for us to release.
Totally, yeah. That's being able to see the fruits of all the effort and planning. I can imagine that felt great. Now, I have kind of a harder hitting question. Feel free to skip over it or not. But a lot of D&D products are considered, you know, luxury kind of products, and then on top of that, you guys have your products. So you have people who are buying the book and then buying your guys's, you know, gold, platinum, premiums editions. Have you guys ever had any blowback on the boxes, items within it, lack of items within it, cost? I mean, just any blowback whatsoever.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the D&D players are very opinionated. You know, they know what they like, right? And they're going to be vocal about what they like. But that's, you know, that's part of what we love about that community. So sure, you know, do we get people saying, oh man, I wish you would put this in, or I wish you had more of this, or this is something that I don't use? Yeah, absolutely. And we do, you know, we do surveys out to our customers to try and get that information so that we can improve our box going forward. Surprisingly, I would say blowback is not a word that I would use. The only time that really honestly that we've had blowback in our early days was when we did not hit our delivery dates. You know, we were still learning. We were figuring out how this all goes. And our first box in particular was pretty late. And we definitely heard it. I mean, our customers said, you've got to be good about this stuff. So we've been better and better with each box about delivering earlier and earlier. So that has, you know, in our early days, that was something that we knew we had to tackle. But as far as our components, we've been pretty lucky in that regard. I think that the people have generally really been really receptive to what we've decided to put in our box.
So the next question that I have pertains to COVID. You know, with Rime of the Frost Maiden coming out in the tail end of the year, did COVID disrupt your guys' distribution and planning lines?
Yeah, look, I mean, COVID was as scary for us as it was for everybody else. You know, our products are designed for your friends to be around a table, right? To have that in-person tabletop experience. This is not for video games. This is for all of us to sit around and laugh and have fun at the table. And so when this thing first hit in March, we were wondering, what does this mean for our high-end tabletop products? You know, are we able to have a box this year? And we decided, after going back and forth and seeing how things, you know, happening over the summer, to go ahead and commit to a platinum box for Icewind Dale. And to our great amazement and satisfaction, it did, you know, it sold out faster than any box we've ever done. This is a community that I think is just super brave and optimistic and willing to support. And they jumped out and said, nope, we still want this. We still expect to be able to play D&D around a table. You know, maybe that looks differently a little bit, at least in the near term, but it sold out. So we were very pleased with that.
That's awesome. Are you guys looking to introduce any digital aspects, Roll20, anything like that in future boxes?
Well, our platinum boxes usually include a code that allows you to get the adventure on D&D Beyond. But as far as other digital assets, we are not allowed to do that at this time. But who knows what will happen.
Okay, I gotcha. And then are you guys looking to start working with other systems? I think I saw something about a Pathfinder character block not too long ago.
Yeah, we're super excited about that. We are working with Pathfinder to create a sort of our take, our platinum edition take on the character book. So this would be, if I'm writing a fighter in Pathfinder, I can get this book and it has the, you know, an expanded character sheet. It has the core rulebook pages that I'm going to want for running a fighter. It's going to have different source materials from different places incorporated into this one book. It's going to have all kinds of journal pages and notes pages that are being designed specifically by Beetle and Grimms for that book. And so we have already talked about having first four books available, the fighter, the wizard, the rogue, and the cleric. And we have a Kickstarter that's going to be running throughout the month of November that we're extremely excited about, getting into that Pathfinder world and offering something to Pathfinder players.
That's awesome. That's my D&D, I'm doing air quotes, D&D is an all-encompassing saying. My tabletop RPG's genesis is in Pathfinder, so that makes me excited to hear.
Yeah, it's a great game. And you know, when you talk about a character, But, you know, you may have a character that you're literally spending years, right? And capturing that character's sort of story and that character's life and journey in a book that at the end of the campaign, you can ultimately put on your shelf and go back and reference. I mean, my friends and I, you know, the five of us have played in campaigns where we wish that we had that kind of a record, right? That we could go back and look at and say, oh yeah, remember, you know, 10 years ago in this campaign when we were doing this and this, that was so cool. And this is the chance for a player to capture that adventurer's life well lived from birth to death.
I greatly look forward to these Kickstarters and these products. So if you had to pick one aspect of your job to say it is your favorite, what would it be?
I love working with our artists. I really, really, I love the through line of coming to an artist, whether it be for an illustration for a bonus encounter or an illustration for our DM screen or an in-world handout, and saying, here is what we're trying to accomplish. Here's the core of what we're looking for, and seeing what the artist brings to that. You know, seeing their own personal take on it and seeing that come to life. You know, first we get a concept and then we work through the concept, and then we get we start seeing the more detailed, you know, execution all the way through final and review and approval with whoever we're working with, whether that be Wizards or whether that be ISO with Pathfinder. And just seeing that artistic process come to life is just so exciting. It's so exciting to say, here's this little kernel, and then see it come back and just be like, oh my God, that is so awesome. That is so cool. Players and DMs are going to love handing this out or looking at this or seeing this come to life. That's got to be one of the most satisfying parts of this.
Very cool. I think if I were in a similar position as yourself, I think that would be probably my favorite as well. Just being able to see that concept literally come to life on each project.
Yeah. And, you know, as a kid playing D&D, I was so visual. You know, I found my way into campaigns through maps. And I used to love just going through the monster manual, or deities and demigods, and just studying the art in there. And I even knew who the artist's names and who did what. And so, you know, I also have last year, the year before's release of the D&D Art and Arcana book, which is sort of the history of the art of D&D. I just dig that stuff. I've always loved that stuff. So to be able to sort of contribute is just so satisfying.
I can only imagine. That's all the questions that I had for this. Is there anything else you wanted to cover or talk about? You mentioned a Kickstarter coming up in the next couple of weeks. Anything specific to that, or do you get to start doing sign-offs?
Yeah, no, I guess the only thing I would say is if you aren't familiar with it, please visit beadlandgrimms.com. On beadlandgrimms.com, you'll be able to learn about our Pathfinder books and the upcoming Kickstarter. You'll be able to learn about the boxes that we currently have available, like the Legendary Edition of Curse of Strahd, the Silver Edition of Icewind Dale, the Gold Edition of Eberron, and the Silver Edition of Descent into Avernus, as well as some other smaller items that we have in our storefront that you can check out. Again, that's Beadle and Grimms. Beadle is B-E-A-D-L-E, and Grimms is with two M's.
Awesome. And then are you personally on the social medias or anything like that, or just through the company?
Just through the company. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time and getting through all of the technical issues that we had today on the recording. But I greatly appreciate the chance to talk with you and really just dive into Beadle and Grimms.
Yeah, super, super fun, Devin. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, and then I'd love to have you guys on in the future. You know, maybe we can time out a second interview, maybe on like next year's box. Alrighty. Well, listeners, just make sure to head on over to Beadle and Grimms and check out some of their amazing stuff. I'm literally just looking on their website right now, and I think I'm going to pick up this Order of the Gauntlet medallion. The thing looks awesome. Other than that, John, you have yourself a lovely rest of your day.
You too.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.